Hi, my name is Malin Huntley. I am 63 years old. Hardest question today. Today is Thursday, December the 10th, 2020. I'm in Amarillo, Texas. I'm here today speaking with Sonia Letson. She's my friend, and I'm so happy to be here with her.
Hi, my name is Sonia Letson, and I am 63 years old next week. So that's another thing we have in common. Today's date is Thursday, December 10th. I am currently located outside of Claude, Texas. We have a cabin at a ranch there, and that's where I am today. And I am here with my friend, Malin Huntley, and we are excited to be here to talk about the elections and our experiences. So, Malin, you know, this was such a momentous year. I know that you, as the election administrator for Potter County, where Amarillo is located, prepared for some things that were going to happen during this election. What problems did you anticipate and prepare for going in?
Well, we were wanting to make voting safe for our voters who would have to vote in person. So we knew with COVID that we needed to have a safe voting place. One of the challenges with that one was that in the state of Texas, it may be federal, I don't know, we could not require voters to wear masks. We did get the support of our county commissioners, and so the election workers were supposed to wear masks, but we couldn't require voters to. And that's just kind of an oddity in election law, because a voter cannot be arrested going to or from a polling site. Therefore, if we required masks and somebody chose to not wear a mask, then we would have to allow them to vote before they could be ticketed or anything else. Therefore, why would we require masks? I mean, it was just one of those things that just wasn't practical. But, you know, we were really determined to make sure that voting was safe. So we had plastic screens, a lot of PPE, 6-foot social distancing. That was kind of top of mind going in. Then there were some outside groups that we met with on a regular basis because they were worried about electioneering and voter suppression and voter intimidation and the potential of us having someone with guns just outside of polling sites. And so part of what we did was to have a plan and prepare and have a way to address those things.
And did you end up with any of those kinds of concerns coming to life?
You know, we had some polling sites that reported cars that would go and hold their horn down the entire distance of the property as they would go by. So they were just outside, but we didn't have anything that looked to be terribly organized. We did not have any guns at the polling site. In Texas, you can carry a gun a lot of places, but one place you cannot carry a gun is into a polling site, even if you have your concealed carry, unless you're law enforcement. And so we had a few people that would forget that, but nobody who deliberately went in there to intimidate.
That's good. I, as a first-time poll worker, I saw some of that electioneering.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, you're not supposed to promote a candidate within the 100 feet of the polling site. But some of those caravans of people on motorcycles with flags and blaring horns did go by the polling site when I was working.
Yeah, and then people walking in that had on a hat, a shirt, a buff, something that endorsed a candidate was fairly common. A lot of people don't know. You know, electioneering is an odd word, and some people don't know, but some people we were kind of prepared for because we were told that some people had told us they were just going to come in and do it deliberately. So they were asked to remove everything, and with a little bit of enforcement, they all did. At least we know.
You did something unusual, I think, or something you'd never been able to do, and that was have because of funding you got, you had some security personnel at each polling site. How did that come about?
Well, there was a grant, and it's a CTCL grant that was offered to us, and it would cover security at the polling sites. And honestly, that saved our skins because, and I'm going to compare it back to 2016. It seemed like in 2016, when we were doing the election, that it was constant drama and constant battling with people over their enthusiasm for how they wanted to vote. And so those are distractions from being able to run an election properly. And just having the presence of some deputies there just shuts the whole thing down because, you know, someone decides that they want to do something they're not supposed to do in a polling site, either, you know, shout out across the polling site, hey, I'm voting for whoever. Just having law enforcement that's there to be able to walk up and say, can I help you, sir? Or can I help you, ma'am? Or you may not have been aware, but what you're doing right now is a Class C misdemeanor or a Class A misdemeanor. That made it so that our workers could actually focus on voting people.
Was there any concern from any groups in town about that being an intimidating factor for voters?
Oh, you know, we did get a few complaints because there are those that do find law enforcement to be intimidating and they are uneasy, and we did not want in any way for a voter to not vote or to feel like they couldn't vote the way they wanted because there was law enforcement there. And but our deputies worked with us to try to keep a low profile. They were there, but we didn't want them to be just front and center.
Yes, my experience in both locations that I worked was that they took a background role, and they were available. Generally, they weren't upfront. I actually liked the upfront doorkeeper kind of role because I liked interacting with people as they came in and trying to get their, you know, their mood good and make them feel good about being there to vote. And by and large, most people were very happy to be there to vote.
Yeah, most of them are. And, you know, one thing that we always see in a presidential is that we've got a lot of inexperienced voters. So they don't know voting manners. So they don't know what they can say or can't say, what they can wear and not wear. So having that door person to kind of just remind people of voting etiquette was extremely helpful.
Yes, and we didn't have, in my experience, which was not every day of early voting, but in my experience, we didn't have very many who wanted to push the envelope or were disgruntled or grumpy. Most people were perfectly good, and the extended early voting really meant that we didn't have people just pile up on top of each other generally. There might be some lines at one of the two locations I was at, not very much because we had 3 whole weeks to vote early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all of that, it worked well. People in general were just happy to be there. And I was really pleased with the polling sites. We did have lines at some places at times, especially the first couple of days. But by and large, people spread out in a very natural way. It was not hard to vote.
There had to be some things that you did not anticipate, though, that came up and you had to adapt to on the fly.
Yes. Well, one thing we didn't anticipate was that people would be so worried about the United States Postal Service and whether the post office would get their ballots mailed in time. And, you know, I realized that we are just one little place in the country, but our postmaster called us and said, we want to work closely with you. We want you to tell us when the ballots are going out. We want you to tell us when important deadlines are. And he actually worked. So as we got close to deadlines, he was making the postal carriers check all of the boxes at the last minute to make sure that he got every ballot in that should be considered. And so didn't anticipate that it was going to be a problem, but our voters did. So we had people who were turning in ballots in person. We had people who would come to vote. You saw that in the polls, come to vote, even though they had received a ballot by mail. And that did create some confusion that we had not really anticipated was going to be that big of a deal. But it did create some hurdles. The biggest thing that I did not anticipate was that the second week, I mean, here I am, I'm in charge of the election, and I test positive for COVID. And at the point that that happened, someone else in my office also tested positive. So suddenly I am down, I'm working with 40% fewer staff in my office. We worked it out to where we could quarantine the three that were left, and no one could come to our floor. So we had to create what we would call contactless elections. No one could come to our floor. We had to move a lot of things around. I was working from home with COVID. And, you know, we had kind of prepared. And, you know, when I was thinking about what would happen with COVID, some of the things that we had done, we had cross-trained some people. So if it was election night and we needed somebody to run the tabulators and they were out with COVID, we had some backups. And those backups were not in this building, not anyone that we'd be exposed to. So we had done that. We had taped some of our trainings for election workers. We had set up an office on the first floor that turned out, we borrowed employees from another building to facilitate there. We did not anticipate, however, that I would get COVID.
And with only five people in your office and two out with COVID,
yes,
you had a staff that was frantically trying to do everything they needed to do, and they did it. They did it. In fact, I don't think anybody in town ever knew what had happened.
They did not. I wanted the voters to know that in-person voting was safe and that we had taken these safeguards. And even when our office went down with COVID, we had safeguards to protect the voters, to protect our workers while we were in quarantine. And so, no, it was not widely known that we were dealing with this hurdle. You stepped up for us because I had been going to every polling site first thing every morning to take temperatures and to pick up some paperwork, hand out PPE, just to make sure that all of our polling sites were safe for voters. And suddenly I can't go. So you stepped up and stood in my place in that role. And so we were still able to keep the polling sites safe.
That was a great experience. Here I am, I am a first-time election worker, and I learned that you have COVID. So I called your chief deputy assistant and said, "What can I do? Just tell me." Mm-hmm. She said, "I don't know. I'll get back with you." So the next day she said, "Can you come and do these rounds?" I said, "I don't know anything about it. I'll be happy to." So she gave me brief instructions from the distance of about, I'm going to say, 10 yards away. She stood at a distance and told me, "Here's what you do. And there's the bag. Take that bag. Go to these polling sites." And what's funny is that you and I look a little alike. We're about the same height, wear glasses, our hair is short. And I would go in the polling sites and some of the newer workers would say, "There's Malin again." And it was not you, it was me. And they would tell me technical things and I'd say, "I'm not Malin. I don't know what that means. But tell me and I'll tell Christy." So it was a great experience. I really did love doing that and love doing working at the polling site, greeting the voters and checking them in and answering questions when they use the machine. The whole thing, the whole experience of being a poll worker to me was extremely rewarding.
So what did you hear? What did when the voters, I know you hear comments from the voters. What were the things that voters say when they came in?
Some voters are wanting to tell you how they're going to vote. They may not say the name, but they want to express that opinion to somebody as they're coming in. And, you know, I
did you practice your poker face?
I would just deflect that, you know. Occasionally it'd be real direct, and I'd say, "You know, we don't talk about that here." But most voters are real low-key. They just want to come in. They want to get their voting done. Mm-hmm. And they're happy to get it done. And they're happy that it's as easy as we make it. One thing that voters did ask a few times was, where is the straight ticket button? And Texas mm-hmm. had repealed that law. So this was the first election without a straight ticket option.
Right. And that was one of the purposes of the door person, was to warn them, hey, you don't have straight ticket anymore. So did that throw very many people off? Did you feel like it slowed the polls down?
It didn't seem to me. And I did not work the first week of early voting when there were longer lines. But in the second and third weeks of early voting, there was always generally a machine available at the location where I worked. And it didn't slow the process down. I could tell, though, that there were people who voted for in one or two races and then cast their ballot and left. Because they didn't go all the way down the ballot.
Right. We could see that from the results, because we could see a lot of what we call undervotes as you went through the ballot, and particularly with uncontested races, but even without, you know, there's just a lot that they left. It, you know, just the voter attrition, so to speak.
There was one story I heard when I was making the rounds in the morning that I loved so much because of being with the League of Women Voters. We produce a voter's guide, and we produce it online as well as in paper. And for this election, we did a huge rollout of voter guides, 10,000 copies in the area. So one morning when I went on the rounds, one of the election judges who knew I was with the league said, yes, a lady came in yesterday with her voter's guide. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, have you read through that? And she said, nope, I'm going to do it while I vote.
Oh my God.
He said she stood at the polling machine, at the voting machine for 30 minutes. He said she would read all the candidates' responses, cast the ballot in that race, turn the page, and do it for the next race, and went through the entire ballot with her voter's guide. I told my board, I said, there you go. You see how important that was. Although most people do actually read and mark it before they come.
Yeah, most do. And I want to go back to League of Women Voters, because, you know, we have been working since August just in our office, skipping lunches, trying to get everybody registered, all the different processes. I think in Texas, our ballot changed twice, so we had to retest equipment. It was just, it was not an easy election on our end. We were just doing things, not if anything was worth doing, it was worth doing three times. And but you also, you guys had set some very lofty goals regarding registering voters to vote. And then here comes COVID, and here come other challenges. So how did the league function with that in mind?
We, like you, had to adapt in many ways. In the spring before COVID hit, we were in every high school. They let us teach classes and register the eligible seniors. We were in grocery stores. We were all over town. When COVID hit, we had to figure out, how are we going to register people to vote when in Texas you cannot do that online?
Right.
You must have a paper registration form with your signature on it.
An original signature, not an, yes.
Yes.
Signed.
Exactly. So it's, you can mail somebody a form or send them a form through email, but they have to sign it and mail it back. So we always relied on in-person voter registration events, and we had to scramble to figure out, how are we going to do this? Well, at first it looked like we wouldn't, but then we adapted and we said, yes, we are, but we're going to do them all outdoors. And that's what we did. We went outdoors from August through the deadline of October 5th mm-hmm. and held 35 events.
That's a lot.
Before, we were in 11 high schools. This time, four of them let us come to either a huge room or an outdoor space. But otherwise, we were always outdoors. And we still, in the face of COVID, managed to get about 1,000 people registered in that time frame. The main reason for that, though, was we decided we would set up outside the three election offices in our two-county area on the deadline. And we pushed and pushed the message that October 5th is the deadline. And that day alone, we registered 440 people to vote at those three locations. So adapting to the outdoor voter registration was a key. I would not want to go through that again, just because it limits you so much.
Well, the wind does blow here.
And the wind does blow. And yes, that was exciting at various locations. But one thing I think you and I agree on is that we would advocate for online voter registration in Texas, as is available in most states, because that would make it so much easier for people to be able to register.
Yes, and it would also make it better for our offices. I looked at a voter registration today, and we probably spent 10 minutes trying to figure out how he spelled his name, because the handwriting was so poor. And there's so many people who register to vote and they either leave out information or it's illegible, and they're making an effort. They possibly have that right to vote, but we can't get it connected because of handwriting. So I definitely agree that online is a good choice.
I think in this legislative session, when Texas legislature goes into session in January, that voting issues, voting rights issues, election law issues will definitely be top of mind, perhaps behind the budget shortfall. But there's a lot to look at. And in terms of your office, I know online registration would be one thing. Was there anything else you thought?
Well, that one is a big one for me, is the online. You know, what I've looked at what they are proposing in our legislature, and a lot of it seems to be voter fraud. They are looking for ways to prevent voter fraud, which there's some irony in this, because in Texas, since 2004, we've only had about 400 cases of voter fraud that were prosecuted, because it's so rare. And but I know there's just a concern that we have a lot of voter fraud. That bothers me to some extent, because what I know as an election official is that we already have systems in place that stop someone from voting multiple times. Voter fraud, can it happen? Yes. Can it happen in mass? It's very difficult to pull off, and because of all the redundancies and the safety checks and everything else, most cases like that get stopped before their votes are ever put in. And in this election, we did have one case, and that I have turned over to the Attorney General, but just one. And even that person did not vote more than once. They voted one place in another county and then made an attempt to vote in our county, claiming residency in both counties. And so to me, that speaks highly for what we do. But I want anything in the legislature that will help instill voter confidence, because what we're looking at now is a nation where some people are like, yeah, the system worked and it's all great, and there's another faction that are like, this was totally fraudulent. And so I would like to find ways to bridge that gap so that people trust the results.
I felt like, as an election worker, seeing everything that's done and the steps that you as an administrator take and we as workers take, that there should be a high level of confidence in the validity of the election. And that so much mistrust was sown, I think, is truly a tragedy, and that it's going to be something that we are going to suffer from in future.
Yeah, it's discouraging when you're giving it your all and the voter doesn't understand that it was done, and it was done correctly. And that just is, it's hard. It's very hard on election officials, election workers. Just like you said, you know, once you got into polls, you saw a lot of things. You learned a lot of things when we do schools. And but it is very difficult to get that message out to the public.
I was impressed by the quality of desire of the election workers that I worked with. And they rotated through. They weren't the same every day.
Right.
Their desire to make sure that things were done right, to only allow people to vote who were eligible to vote, to make sure all record keeping was proper. You know, I just think that sowing that mistrust does a great disservice to election workers and election administrators who really do want to do this right.
Yes. And I think the public does not know all the steps we take, just even in testing the ballot. I've heard from some people that they think that some of the votes are changed. You know, just every few vote is changed to someone else. And, you know, where we are is, by and large, the same system that was present in 2016 nationwide that elected our current president is the same system that just elected a different person. And so, you know, if we had confidence in it then, we should have confidence in it now.
And if we have confidence in the results, let's say in Texas, where a different person got the majority of the votes, why don't we have confidence in the votes?
I don't know. And you know, I just scratch my head because I don't know how every state does it. But I know that there's an integrity. There's one thing about the election equipment nationwide. It has to be approved at the federal level. And so that's where it starts. And so no one just goes out and willy-nilly comes up with election equipment. There's a standard. But in Texas, you also have to meet the Texas standard, which is a little bit higher than the feds. And so we only have three companies here that actually meet that standard. But in general, with all of them, it's one voter, one vote. And that is what everyone works towards.
Right.
Right.
that's right. And that's when there is an issue, you can spot it. That's the thing about.
We can. Yeah, we know when something gets off. And so number of people who checked in need to match the number of people who voted. You know, there's some things that we have to look for. Ballots by mail, you compare the signature of the person who applied to vote with the signature of the person who voted that ballot. Those things have to match. There's just a lot of things that are in place to safeguard the ballot box.
It's amazing to me all the hubbub over voting by mail, which of course has been around since the Civil War, and which you have conducted many, many elections where people vote by mail, and there never was much concern about whether those were going to count properly. Did you see in this election, you said that there were people who wanted to turn them in instead of mailing them out of concerns of the post office, but did you see an increase overall in ballots by mail?
We did. We, by about fourfold, in the votes by mail, because part of it was campaigns and or PACs sending out applications to people who are eligible. So we did see an increase there, but we also definitely saw an increase in people that sometimes they didn't know that they had even applied to vote by mail because some groups had made it so easy. But we also had a lot of people who are calling on the phone and saying, did my vote count? Because of stories they're hearing, misinformation in the media really was a killer in this election. It is in every election. And so stories that go out there that worry voters that things aren't being done right, and these stories have no basis in fact. That really affected a lot of our ballot by mail voters who in Texas are largely over 65 years old.
Right. And there was a move, of course, to expand the pool to anyone who wanted to vote by mail because of the fear of contracting COVID. And that litigation, of course, got started fairly early as we saw what COVID was going to do, because we had a runoff election in July in the midst of the pandemic.
And so our office was informed that if someone called that we could not tell them, that fear of contracting COVID was not considered a disability for the purpose of voting by mail. And that was hard for people who are frightened.
Yes. And Texas is very strict on voting by mail, unlike most states. So 65 or older, or disabled, or incarcerated, or going to be out of the county on election day.
Right.
Election period.
Right. And that's all we have. But, you know, in truth, had they expanded it, it would have been really hard for us, because just with our increased numbers, we did not have the capacity. With the way it works in Texas, it's not scalable in its present form. And so had they expanded and said, hey, anyone can vote by mail, we would have been looking for a whole nother floor of our building to be able to manage the ballots by mail. And I would have been looking for a whole additional group of election workers. And so it would have created a challenge. It's one of those things that needs to be looked at in the state of Texas. I'm just glad that they didn't do it at the 11th hour.
Yes, I think I agree with you about that, that we do need to look at expanding accessibility of ballots by mail. It does allow more people who find it difficult or for health reasons.
Well, it's not just them. If you think about a young mother with two small children, those children don't need to be in our polling sites with COVID around. I love when moms bring kids there, because it exposes them to democracy. So I welcome children. But when you're trying to protect your kids, you have to choose. It's actually my daughter-in-law said, you know, I have to choose between, do I want to exercise my right to vote? Do I want to protect my children? And you should be able to do both.
Absolutely. Should be able to do both. We can learn so much from other states who make voting easier. Texas is one of the states that makes voting hard in many ways. Deadline to register 30 days before election, online registration, and the limitations on ballots by mail just being a few examples for us. But what do you see? You'll be looking at new elections in May next year.
I will be. And I'm really, so at that point, we will have some new legislation. Probably they'll go into effect, either if it's not in effect by May, it will be by next September. So you'll see it when we do the next November election. But where are you going to be putting your efforts with the League of Women Voters, with the League here? What are your new goals?
We, of course, are hoping to continue doing what we do, but we shift a little bit right now to advocacy. So this morning I had an interview by Zoom with one of our state legislators to find out what his priorities are for the session and to see where he stands on voting rights as well as redistricting. So the League begins to focus now on advocacy issues such as voting rights and election law and the redistricting process. Yeah. And that'll carry us through next year and into the following year. He indicated to me he didn't know when they might begin to talk about redistricting, because we don't know yet when the census numbers will be in. So that's how we pivot in the short term. But we also will look at the May election, register voters for that, and try to get voters' guides out for those candidates. It never does really stop. Somebody said, now you get to rest a little. I'm sure they said that to you. And I said, well, not very long.
No, not for very long. So I do have another question for you, though. When you're out registering people, did you identify a particular gap, a particular group that we're not reaching with voter registrations, that a hole that needs to be addressed?
We began to meet the need of high school seniors last spring, and we were developing our technique on that. Want to strenuously work on that. We want to meet the needs of college students, but there's lots of people between the age of 18 and 26 that are not in high school or college. And I think there's a gap there that online would help fill, because these kids are doing this they do everything online. So I think we could do messaging and get to them if we had online voter registration. But in terms of in person, our gap is again going to be the young vote. But as you saw, the youth vote increased.
It did. Yeah, the youth vote in our area really did increase. And I'd like to figure out why. If it's something we did right, we want to do it again. One thing that I want to go back into the data, because we know we have a pocket of 18-year-olds that voted, which is significant because they're most likely still in high school. And I want to go back in and figure out where they voted. And part of the reason is one thing that we did differently here is I did send information to our schools for the closest location for students and teachers to vote from their schools. And I was told by some that they were not going to pass that information on to the students because they did not want to give any kind of anything that could be perceived as a bias or trying to encourage kids to vote one way or the other, so they weren't going to pass it on. But obviously someone did pass it on because we have numbers that we didn't have before. So, but we had never done that before, just letting the young people know through their schools where to go vote.
There are league chapters downstate that actually work with their districts to promote a field trip for voting for seniors. And I want to get in with our superintendents and say, wouldn't this be great if all eligible seniors could get on the school bus and go vote during early voting on a certain day from your school?
And they might do that in the city election since it's nonpartisan, but they're afraid they can't do it. You know, they're afraid to do it and get charged with something that they're not allowed to do. So, but I'm with you. I think that they should be able to go. Maybe you need to start you have the League of Women Voters. Maybe we need the Little League of Women Voters and we start a high school group that gets involved.
We are getting some college students working on league things for us at the university and the junior college. And so, yeah, I think a high school league is also a great idea.
That's good. That's good. And one thing we did with students, which you probably saw on election day, is get the students involved as election workers on election day. And that is always huge. Those kids are top notch. They're so much better with technology than the rest of my workers. But don't tell anybody I said that.
No, that's exactly right. I feel the same way. But, you know, after a few times, we usually get it, even as old as we are.
Yes. No, everything is so easy that is where it is. So that's where you're headed with it. And for us, we always sit back and let the dust settle, and then we look at what we think we could have done better. What went well, what we can fine-tune and make it better in the next election. I am very pleased with the reliability of the election. And, you know, that is the one thing that at the end of the day, that's what matters the most, is did we get it right?
I agree with you. And I feel like we got it right.
In spite of the hurdles and the challenges.
In spite of all the difficulties.
Yes.
And I commend you for how hard you work.
Well, thanks. I think about my staff that was left here. We were already working 12-hour days just to keep up. And then you take away two people and we're still having to process all the ballots that came in by mail and all the applications that came in to vote by mail and everything else. And the team worked very hard.
Yes. How much support do you get from the commissioner's court if you decide, you know, I need more workers next time or a budget?
Back to that budget thing. It's going to be hard. You know, it's going to be hard because our budgets are tight. And so I think the biggest thing is the next time, one of the things that added to the cost was definitely COVID. And so we needed extra workers for that. We did have workers who went down, either in quarantine or having it. It's when you start looking at the cost of the election, added costs that were brought on by having to do an election in the middle of a pandemic was huge.
I think you and I probably both will be glad to see this year go on by. And us and a lot of people in the country. But it has been in some ways such a great experience. Learned so much and realized what we can overcome.
I agree. And I think that's the important thing is that it's made us stronger. And we realize that we can get these things done and we can adapt.
Thank you, my friend, so much for talking to me.
I didn't realize that you were my doppelganger, but I guess you are.
That's right. I can stand in any time as long as people see me from the back.
There you go. All right. Represent me well.